Hi, Stuart. Great to see you. Hey, let's take a moment to let some folks show up. It always takes a minute before we see some people who find us. I'm glad we were able to do this today.
Stephen, thanks for asking me to the party. Appreciate it.
Yeah, as always, a delight, and it's been a while since we've been able to do this. So honestly, it's for me a pleasure, and as usual, there's more than a few things to talk about.
Sadly true, yes.
So you know what? Let's just jump in. I want to welcome everyone who joins us today. I'm Stephen Beschloss with America America. I'm joined by the one-of-a-kind, strategically brilliant Stuart Stevens, who I would say has summed it all up in his 2020 book, It Was All a Lie, about the utter lack of principle among Republicans, which frankly continues to prove itself on a daily basis, even as Trump's cognitive decline accelerates. And I've been looking forward to us finding a time to talk, but it seemed to me that it became more necessary for us to do this when I saw your instant response to Graham Plattner's video suspending his campaign. And as I told you at the moment, your righteous anger was palpable. So can you explain why?
Well, I mean, look, Graham Plattner is a spoiled rich kid who had a tough war. And I thought that statement that he gave on camera was one of the more despicable pieces of video in a long time. And that there's some pretty stiff competition for that. He's still blaming women. He refuses to accept responsibility. It's like, hey, dude, listen, there's no conspiracy with the main Democratic Party to have women come out and accuse a candidate of rape. Like, it's never happened before. Maybe it's you, maybe all these other women. And, you know, God forbid I should be giving advice to Graham Plattner, but he has one chance, I think, to lead a normal life after this, and that's if a Democrat wins the main Senate race. Otherwise, he's going to probably be the guy who kept Donald Trump in power.
So yeah.
Is that going to be the title of your book? I kept Donald Trump in power, the Graham Plattner story. And he ought to just shut the fuck up and do whatever the Democratic Party wants him to do that they think would be helpful to elect a candidate. And apologize to the women, apologize to his family, apologize to his supporters, apologize to the state, apologize to the Democratic Party, apologize to the country. This angry bro, you know, this guy who dropped out of Hotchkiss, dad of Ivy League or grandfather in Ivy League, there's just something about the whole thing that refusal to accept responsibility. It's just, it's the worst of, 2026 malehood in America.
Yeah. I mean, look, I want to talk about sociopathy and sociopathic leadership and, why that's so attractive to too many people. But I want to linger for a moment on this sort of, on that video and what he did, which I agree was shameless in its arrogance and his refusal to apologize. Even if he says the accusations are false, there is an environment here that he ought to be. He should have been conscious of. And what I'm wondering about actually is, you've been through campaigns where somebody has had to exit a campaign, so obviously there's a period of denial and, all the steps that one goes through. Did he do this too soon? Is that part of it? I mean, or is that just you think who he is and he was just never going to get to the point of doing something that's more, decent?
Well, look, I don't think he's a decent guy. And I think he's an extraordinarily self-centered guy. He's a spoiled rich kid who thinks, the world is out to get him instead of the guy who's had every advantage in life.
Yeah.
There's no roadmap here except accept responsibility and humility and move forward. Now, voters are pretty forgiving, but you have to ask for forgiveness. You can't, you can't say, I'm going to quit drinking and stay at the bar. You got to go to Betty Ford. You got to give it a go. And, you know,
that assumes you recognize there's a problem.
Yeah. Which I think this guy is a very sick guy. And so, you know, even if you don't say the allegations are true, which allegations? The first, the second, the third, right. The fourth, the fifth, right. The sixth.
There's a pattern here, and it's look, a lot of people were willing to forgive it and forgive it for multiple reasons, right? Well, okay, he went through a war experience, you know, there was something real called PTSD, whatever the specifics are of his own experience, you know, that's a real thing. People can change. That's possible, and they do struggle. I think people are forgiving in that way, but then you have to layer on top of that the desperate hunger to get rid of Susan Collins and to get the Democrats back in power, and that has a way of also causing people to gloss over character flaws.
Yeah, in all likelihood, a generic Democrat should beat Susan Collins. She should have lost last time if her opponent had run a better campaign. You know, it's ironic. My old firm worked for Susan Collins last time. I'd left the firm, left the Republican Party. But I know on election day, they thought they were going to lose. They had one of these phone calls where they all got on and said, hey, we gave it a go. Nobody blamed anybody. It just wasn't there. And they were astonished that she won. And she actually won easily. I was astonished, too. It's the tragedy of this is so much because the stakes are so high. And you know what I say about something like this is if you really believe that we're in an existential crisis moment, which you and I certainly do, and I think a lot of people do,
right?
That really changes the perspective of everything. That means you put aside these party differences, you put aside intramural fights, and you say, okay, you know, look, World War II, we fought with Stalin. For a greater good.
Yeah, don't battle the guy standing next to you. You know, focus on your target.
And this idea that Plattner has that he can help choose a replacement. It's like, dude, guys who are accused of rape and get fired don't kind of traditionally get to pick their replacement at work.
Right.
It doesn't work that way, man.
Right.
I'm sorry.
Nor is he the singular progressive candidate, right? The only one who's got the vision to be able to promise, you know, a progressive future. I mean, to your point, he abdicated that. Surely now.
You know, I saw someone post, you know, AOC was always reluctant here, never endorsed him. Someone posted, you know, maybe being a female bartender, you recognize guys like this. I thought that was pretty apt. You know, you've seen that kind of anger and hostility before.
Well, let's just stick for a second. I mean, how do you think this plays out now? I mean, obviously, there's a list of main, you know, officials who can be, you know, who've all had, you know, less than perfect success. But to your point, maybe any of them represents a generic Democrat who might be able to pull through. What's your expectation?
Well, my candidate's already lost, who's Helen Cox Richardson, by refusing to get in. And I was really...
I heard a lot of people say, like, come on, Heather, please.
And then there was a poll showing her 7-up, which isn't bad, you know, if you're sitting in your living room working on your Substack and you're 7 points up in a U.S. Senate race and you haven't even announced.
Wow. Has she officially said that she's out?
She's given a really strong, almost Sherman-esque statement. Uh-huh. You know, if Helen Cox Richardson was listening, I would say, look, you're a history teacher. This is your chance to make some history.
Yeah.
And what you can do for the Democratic Party by running, winning or losing is so much greater than anything else you're going to contribute between now and the election. You can help define the party. You can be an example to other candidates of how to conduct yourself in these inner party fights. A Collins, Heather Cox Richardson debate. I mean, you get 10 million views.
Yeah.
And it would help all Democrats. And one or two things will happen. You'll win or you'll lose. If you lose, you're a larger figure and you go back to doing what you were doing before. If you win, you're a United States Senator and you might be president. That's not such a bad gig. But, you know, I have learned, Stephen, that reluctant candidates are usually not good candidates.
Yeah.
And if I was sitting in her living room, I would say to her, "How whatever you think could be bad about this, it will be worse. The best day will be the day before you announce."
Yeah. And look, you want to have a thoughtful, smart, knowledgeable person who actually has a breadth of history when they enter into it. Wouldn't that be nice, right? And somebody who's capable of inspiring people and informing people and educating people and you know, all of those things, which, to your point, she's the one.
And I imagine if you did a Venn diagram of Heather Cox Richardson supporters, subscribers, and Susan Collins supporters, there'd be a ton of overlap. Which actually makes it really hard for Collins to attack her because she's attacking her own voters. So I think, you know, it would be a very civil race conducted on a high level. Susan Collins is not a dumb person. And it would be great for the country, but she's not going to run apparently.
Right.
There is no good process here.
Yeah.
To pick someone, there are worse processes than others.
We're all sort of stinging over the sense of the 90X days that Kamala Harris had to run, and you know, all the people who continued to complain. You know, there wasn't a democratic process here; she was just sort of installed. And do you think, sort of given this tight time frame, does the process matter very much?
I think the process matters. Yeah. And I think they're going to try to make it as wide and as inclusive as possible by adding as many delegates as they can. I think Harris ran a very good campaign and was an excellent candidate and would have made a terrific president. Donald Trump's campaign, and I just find this astounding, and I really didn't, it felt like this at the time, but I thought it really couldn't be true. He never ran a single positive ad. It's the only presidential campaign I've ever known that ran all negative.
Yeah.
And I tend to think, and look, there's super, super smart people running that Harris campaign, and I've gone up against them and they've beaten me, so what the fuck do I know? But I think that they tried to go through the traditional stations of the cross of introducing a candidate, trying to get you to know her, go through her policy. I think in retrospect, they would have been better served to spend a lot more time attacking Donald Trump. And that would be my advice to a Maine Democrat. Don't be defensive about this. Don't think that you have to in any way talk about what's happened. You're the nominee of the party, okay? Parties are like bowling clubs. They can pick their leaders any way they want to. There's nothing in the Constitution that even mentions parties. So you're the nominee, and then I would go straight at Susan Collins.
Yeah.
It's pretty simple. Do you want a Donald Trump Republican, which she is?
Yeah.
Or do you want somebody who's changed? Do you think things are going in the right direction or not? And just make it a straight up choice, a referendum on Trump.
Yeah. And look, I mean, I think the very simple notion that people want a fighter, not a folder. People want somebody who is going to engage in combat. You know, they want to know that this is not going to be another business as usual person, right? And to your point, they have only a finite number of months to make sure that that message gets through. And if it's Collins between now and November, well, then it has to be, you know, it has to be Trump come November, right? I mean, are you?
Oh yeah, you have to put
of the accountability crowd that's going to, you know, work to get rid of this, curtail their power and begin to, you know, investigations and prosecutions and all of the things that sort of move us beyond this this period of destruction, you know, or aren't you?
Yeah, look, I think we've been in a series of change elections. 16 was a change election. 20 was a change election, and 24 was a change election. You know, you can't say Donald Trump wasn't more of a change candidate than the incumbent vice president. This will be a change election. So, you know, pretty much my advice to Democrats in almost every race would be, this isn't complicated.
Yeah.
If you think things are going in the right direction, you should vote for the person in power. It's simple.
Yeah.
You got what you want. If you think you can do better, I've got an alternative. And I would try to keep it that simple. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't get into litigating on what that change is going to be. I'd be for broad strokes. I'm against the, you know, crazy, stupid Republican war we're losing.
Yeah.
It's costing us a fortune in our budgets and at the gas pumps and our energy costs. I'd be for taxing millionaires. I would be for standing up against Russia. these big strokes and holding the criminality of the Trump administration responsible. Should masked men who shoot unarmed citizens be arrested?
Yes.
Should the person who gave them the power be arrested? Yes. Should Stephen Miller be prosecuted and tried? Absolutely. And I think that...
Do you think those things have to be said now? And do you think people need to hear those now? I don't want to, I'm always reluctant to talk about litmus tests. On the other hand, I think that people need to know, like I said, that, that you're a fighter and that you understand, this thing has got to change. And that does mean, I think at the heart of it, it means accountability.
The energy in the Democratic Party is an anti-Trump and Trumpism, anti-MAGA energy.
Yeah.
And I would just ride that horse.
Yeah.
That is when you look at Gavin Newsom, not a bad politician, I mean, the guy, governor of California, not a small thing.
Yeah.
So what did he take away from the 24 elections? He tacked right. He had, all different people on his podcast who were right wing. And what happened to the Democrats? They kind of threw up on his shoes and he's like, okay. Maybe having Charlie Kirk on my caucus wasn't a great idea. What am I going to do? I'm going to attack Donald Trump.
Steve Bannon on the show too, didn't he?
It's Steve Bannon on the show. So I'm going to attack Trump. And he's been rewarded for it.
Yeah.
How do you go from being an obscure billionaire governor of Illinois to a national figure? You attack Trump.
Right.
And I think.
And can we say on behalf of J.B. Pritzker, and I will call myself a fan because he is one of those early people who, who said loud and clear, this is a 5-alarm fire. He said it, within the first month. And he said, he described the reality of Nazi Germany leading up to Kristallnacht and making it clear. I know that there are many people who might think that I'm being, alarmist and extreme, but, people who were not alarmist and extreme are the ones who didn't survive. And he obviously takes that experience sort of into account and how he views it. And he's been, I think, one of the stronger voices and actors in terms of saying, when ICE comes into Illinois and is, doing lawless things on the streets and in homes and all of that, ignoring people's due process, we're going to gather as much of the evidence as we can so that when the time comes, we can have the accountability hearings.
And you absolutely have to have that. And, I am a great believer that Democrats need to start talking about in serious terms the structure that will be erected to hold the Trump criminality responsible. And it's probably going to have to involve the state attorney generals because Trump is going to pardon everybody. And my model for this in a rough way is sort of the tobacco tort, where these different attorney generals came together. And, there's not a state in the country where it's legal to kidnap, human traffic, shoot people. That's what ICE was doing in every state that they worked in. They didn't shoot everybody, but they're doing illegality, assaulting people. That's illegal. Who's going to do it? And it's not just the agents that are doing it. It's the people that are telling them that they have absolute immunity if they do it. That would be people like Stephen Miller and Kristi Noem and, the current DHS guy. And that should straight how it goes. Trump has immunity for stuff that he does in official acts.
Yeah.
The crypto stuff, that's not an official act. In fact, that's his defense. It's not a specific act. But what he's doing, what Steve Witkoff's doing, what Jared Kushner's doing, all of these people need to be prosecuted.
Can we go back to Pam Bondi? Can we take a look at the guy who's going to be trying to sneak his way into the attorney general's position in his confirmation hearings next week, which is going to be a shit show, I think. And then it's going to be pretty fascinating to see whether, whether the overwhelming recognition is you can't let this guy in. I mean, if that happens, that's a nightmare.
Yeah, he's a mob lawyer. Just the idea that the president of the United States would have a criminal defense lawyer.
Yeah.
It's so Roy
Cohn.
And if the idea that he, you know, flies down to Florida, meets with the most notorious convicted sex offender of our time, and lo and behold, that person gets to move to a Club Fed, where even the inmates in the Club Fed are offended.
Well, can you remember that you know it was nearly unanimous the number of members of Congress who voted for the release of the Epstein files, the Transparency Act, and here we are. You know, here we are many months later, and they've kept at least 3 million files locked up.
Yeah, look, I think that one of the political realities that really favors Democrats is that the energy of the Republican Party was really driven by two things more than anything. The Epstein conspiracies and no more foreign wars. So what do we have? No one has been prosecuted for Epstein, and we're in a foreign war. And I think that, you know, the numbers, you know, polling is a funny thing. If I was doing polling, in fact, we are doing a little polling, I would ask a screening question. Do you believe that Donald Trump lost a free and fair election? And if you say no, I just throw you out of the poll. I mean, well, why do I need to talk to you? You're not going to change your mind about anything. And when you start looking at these numbers, these head-to-head numbers, that's really deceptive. What you really need to look at is the strongly favorable and the strongly unfavorable. Those are the people with the most intensity, the people who absolutely will vote. And Donald Trump on the economy is under 20% and favorable. And strongly favorable is something like 10%. And we've never seen this.
An incumbent before. President.
Yes. I imagine, you know, these are Hoover numbers. So, one of my frustrations with Democrats is a lack of swagger, a lack of asserting we're right, they're wrong, a lack of, you know, certainty, like we are going to win this fucking thing. We're going to win because we're smarter.
So much fretting.
We're in the right. And, you know, this idea we have this lunatic president who's appointed these drunks, communists, conspiracy nuts, weirdos, freaks to run the United States government.
Criminals.
And we're having a criminal appointing criminals. And we're having a discussion about what's wrong with the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
Like, really?
Yeah.
Really, guys?
Yeah.
I mean, and that comes from somebody that spent a lot of years pointing out flaws in the Democratic Party. But, you know, it's the only pro-democracy party in America now. And, you know, Joe Trippi, the Democrat consultant, I think was, you know, among the best of his generation. We used to do races against each other. And we look back and we laugh. Like, what did we make attack ads about? Like, the capital gains tax should be 28, not 32%. It's like, what the
fuck? People cared about those things. They fought about those things.
I mean, it's like, you know.
Not about existential survival of the Republic.
Seems like, you know, worrying about your cholesterol count in a knife fight. Like, you know, maybe there's like more pressing issues right now.
So can we zoom out a little bit? I want to linger on this this issue about sociopathy and demagoguery. And what is it? I'm going to ask it first to you as a longtime Republican strategist, somebody who understands something about the Republicans, but I think this point will go to the Democrats as well. We see it with somebody like Plattner, what is it about voters' attraction to sociopathy and demagoguery? I mean, I'm thinking Trump, obviously. I'm thinking about Joseph McCarthy. And the danger that we have of the others who may not be clinically sociopaths, who are now likely to emulate this, you know, this approach to leadership.
Well, look, I think there's something we did inside the Democratic Party, inside the Republican Party, without realizing it. Mostly, I didn't realize it, and that is we evolved a system that rewarded compliance. That when you went it long, you got ahead. When you waited your turn, you got ahead. To have independent thought, to speak up and speak out against the mainstream of the party, that was punished. So it's sort of like a genetic experiment. You do this for 40 years, what do you get? You get these remarkably compliant politicians who are, you know, most notably in the Senate.
Yeah.
And I think that the need, the desire for a strong man on the right is a different creature than the appeal of a Plattner. Mm. I think on the right, it is a sense that we live in a chaotic world where the power that I once had, primarily by my race, is being challenged. Right. And make America great again. Well, what are you talking about? Make America when you were white and you were assumed to have a certain amount of power.
Yeah. And I would just layer into that. I mean, uncertainty, a world that's increasingly complex, yeah. Increasingly feels overwhelming, and just sort of in broad terms, how about somebody coming in who just says, you know, I can fix it. I alone can fix it.
I alone can fix it. You know, I mean, say what you will about Ronald Reagan. His vision of what it was to be an American is 180 degrees from what Trump's was. So in Ronald Reagan's world, I mean, announced in front of the Statue of Liberty to, you know, celebrate immigrants. Yeah. His speech was a beautiful ode to immigration.
Yeah.
In Ronald Reagan's world, to be born an American, you had won life's lottery. Mm. Now, there was inequality. Some people had better odds than others, but no one was disadvantaged being an American. In Trump's America, being born in America makes you a victim, a sucker. There are these powerful forces, like you're saying out there, like Canada, that are taking advantage of the United States. And it completely changes your relationship with your government and how you see yourself. When you start seeing yourself as a victim, someone who's aggrieved, someone who's been taken advantage of, it really changes your relationship with your government, your role in society. And I hear echoes of that with Plattner.
Yeah.
That there are these power, the Democratic forces sure. are out there to get me.
Conspiratorial forces, of course.
It's like, you know, this is a short walk to Pizzagate.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, do you not realize that, dude? There's no conspiracy here. You know, how come we didn't do it against, you know, Ndami? How come we didn't do it against Bernie Sanders? It's ridiculous.
Yeah. But I'm lingering on this sort of notion about, you know, the charismatic aspect of a sociopathic leader that lures people, that feels appealing. Maybe it's the strongman side of it, or maybe it's just the, you know, as we've seen with Trump, it's the entertainment value, just the excitement of it that seems to lure people, maybe give people this sense, obviously his own people, like you can be your worst self. You can let it all out, right? You can identify those people who are the source of your problems. You know, you can demonize them. You can revel in your racism. You can do all of those things, because I'm saying it's okay to be that person, and I'm going to show you what that looks like.
Yeah, I mean, it legitimizes hate and anger.
Yeah.
And, you know, all of us have moments when we feel like things are stacked against us. And, you know, politics in America, for the most part, has been about aspiration to be something bigger and better than we are. You know, what Trump says is that side of you that feels like a little road rage when somebody cuts you off, you have to embrace that. That's your truest and best self. And if you don't, you're just a sucker and you're being taken advantage of. And, you know, you see this with Plattner, a guy, again, who had every advantage in life.
Stuart, you've frozen for a moment. Let's see if you come back. Well, we've lost Stuart for a moment. I think he's coming back now, or maybe not yet. We were on our way to talk about, you know, what happens at the midterms, what happens in 2028, what that tells us about the future of the Democrats and the future of the country, our ability to kind of get through this period. Is it possible to get to some place of trust and possibility? Let's see for a moment whether Stuart joins us again. If not, then this will be our swan song for the day. Well, it looks like we've lost Stuart, and you know, we were pretty close to time. You know, all I want to say is that I look back to when Jimmy Carter was the candidate, where he said, "I will never lie to you." That's what he said to the American people. And after the, you know, the nonstop lying and the criminality, the corruption of the Nixon years, you know, Jimmy Carter's humility and honesty made a difference for people. And I'm wondering, might leave you with this, I'm wondering if that's what we might expect, not only in the midterms when we look at candidates, but maybe also to who are the candidates in 2028. In the pendulum shift, I hope that what that does look like is Americans saying, like, enough with the lying, enough with the corruption, enough with the felonious behavior, the criminality, the reason why we actually absolutely have to bring back ethical leadership and good governance. So with that, I thank you all for joining us. Sorry that we lost Stuart, but glad we had the minutes we had together. Look forward to the next time. Again, I'm Stephen Beschloss with America. If you're not a subscriber, I hope you'll become one. Thanks.